Okay, well, let's begin. Welcome, everyone, to SIA 313, where we'll be talking about the self-service password reset features in FIM 2010 R2. I'm really glad everyone's here. These afternoon sessions on the last day of tech ed, a little bit brutal. Usually it means one of three things. Either you've missed your plane, you really, really don't want to go back to the office, or hopefully you're really excited about what it is we're talking about. And I'm really excited about what we're talking about because the team that I've been working with back in Redmond has been working on this for the past couple years, and we're excited to talk with you about it. Who here in the audience likes how their organization supports password reset today? Anyone? One, maybe two, half-hearted, maybe three. In general, not a lot of satisfaction around how password reset works in organizations today. If you're like a typical large organization running, having a lot of users in Active Directory, the way it works is you have users, they have passwords, they forget their passwords. They forget them frequently, and they call help desk. It is expensive to staff that help desk to support them, to answer the phone, to authenticate who they are, and to reset their password securely. Then it's a pain, it's additional work, it's additional expense to develop the reports for the security guys who want to know who reset their password, who did it for them, what information did they have to validate that they were who they said they were. And then thirdly, you've got dissatisfied users. You've got people who are trying to get their work done, they're trying to complete their marketing analysis, they're trying to spend time with customers, and instead they're on the phone with help desk for something that they forgot their password, but still somewhere in the back of their mind they're blaming you. We're here today to talk about the solution to that problem. With FIM 2010, the password reset features let you reduce help desk calls, driving user actions away from help desk into a self-service model where people can help themselves. Improving compliance outcomes, so that instead of having an Excel sheet that tracks where who resets someone's password and why they did it and when they did it, compliance is just baked into the system because all the requests take place in band, in an environment that you have a defined policy and a workflow that runs according to that policy and only according to that policy. And you'll get better user productivity and satisfaction because they don't have to call help desk, they don't have to wait on hold, they can get their work done in line in the places where they expect those experiences to be, like they've had with online banking, like they've had with webmail, they can get a new password themselves. So this is the kind of presentation that from an engineering team you just love to give because we've got some great things to talk about. And one of those things actually is, I've only been able to talk about for a brief period of time this afternoon, which is that the R2 release of FIM is now available. So we RTM'd a little while ago, it's been up on MSDN, and now as of, I think, about an hour ago, it's up on the STB blog. It is generally available, so if you have SA or whatever, you can go get this now and install it and use it, and I'm very excited about that. The second thing is, who was here at last year's presentation that I gave around password reset at TechEd? A few people in the audience, not many. So last year's presentation was fun for a different reason. It showed the work that we'd done for the first year of working on the feature set and basically got the feedback, yeah, that's great, Jeff. And then, holy Toledo, did you guys beat me up? All the other things that you wanted us to do said, the work you've done is great, but we want a lot more from you if your product is going to meet the requirements of our organization for password reset. We've delivered on a tremendous amount of what you asked for, and so I'm really happy to tell you about that and to show you that in today's presentation. The first thing, the most important thing we heard is, I need broader reach. I don't need to only support my users, my employees, when they're away from the office. I need to support external users. I don't manage their machines. I can't control what browsers they're using. They're going to be using mobile devices. And your solution just has to work with those. And we've delivered on that. With the R2 release, we've developed password registration and reset portals that basically work with any modern browser that, you know, supports JavaScript, supports cookies, supports CSS media queries. And likewise, that includes the most common mobile device browsers. The second thing we heard is we needed to do a lot more to meet the security requirements of the diverse organizations in our customer base, represented by, you know, people at TechEd. And we did a tremendous amount of work to enable this. The first thing we did is, how many people here are familiar with FIM 2010? Seen the password capabilities? A good number. One of the things that we heard a lot is, hey, when a user is registering for the QA gate, that's our name for doing knowledge-based authentication using secret questions, we need to be able to ensure that users don't put in the same answer for every question. We need to be able to ensure that they don't put in A, B, C, D, E as the answers for their questions. And we've enabled that capability for the R2 release. You can prevent users from having duplicated answers, and you can use regular expression to define what answers are allowed. Second thing we heard is, hey, these secret questions, I've read about these things on the web. I'm not sure that they're right for all of our user scenarios. We want to do more than that. We want to have another authentication factor. For the R2 release, we've developed two new gates that let you use different authentication factors to authenticate a user for purposes of doing a password reset. We've developed, and I'll show you in a moment, using a security code sent to a mobile phone as an authentication factor for password reset, and a security code sent to an alternate email address used to authenticate a user for password reset. And the last class of things we heard from you is, we need a better user experience than you've provided for me in FIM 2010. The first thing we heard is, you know, hey, this looks like a Microsoft application. And our initial reaction was, great, that's what it's supposed to be, right? And what we heard was, no, not at all. What we want it to look like is our application. We want it to look like an internal application. We want it to look like something that comes from us and our users will recognize and trust. And so we've worked to bring much of our user experience into the password registration reset portals that I'll show you in a little bit, which are extensively customizable in terms of the logo, the color, the font, the theme, and even the various elements of UI text that are shown within the portal. We also heard a number of scenarios where, hey, this interactive registration where users have to go in and type in their answers, that doesn't work very well for us. We've solved that with programmatic registration. We'll talk more about the scenarios and the implementation for that later on in the presentation. We also heard about deployment, that, hey, it's, you know, maybe easier to deploy FIM than some of your competitors for an end-to-end solution, but what I want to do is I want to get password reset up and running really fast so I can show my executive leadership, here is how it works, and get enthusiasm for my project. And the bar for doing that, that's a pretty high bar, and we've addressed that for the R2 release. So with that, I'm going to switch over to a demo and move over to some running code and show you what we've done. And for purposes of the demo, I'm going to take the role of Anna, who is a contractor at a company called Fabricam. And Fabricam is rolling out its password, self-service password reset service for its contractors. And Anna has been identified as a contractor who makes heavy use of the password reset help desk. And so she's been chosen to be part of the pilot project. Yeah, hear the laughter. Everyone's got some Annas in their organization, don't they? So Anna gets an email from the IT department saying, hey, please go register for password reset. Then if you forget your password, you'll be able to help yourself. So she goes to the password reset portal. She authenticates to it since she's not on the network. And there she sees the Fabricam password registration portal. This will come up in a second. Right now it's a little bit slow because I've got an awful lot of software running directly off my laptop. And you see the FIM password registration portal, but customized for Fabricam. You've got a Fabricam graphic, you've got Fabricam text in the browser bar, so this looks and feels a lot like a Fabricam application. Anna clicks Next, and she begins her password registration experience. The first thing that'll happen is she'll be prompted for her domain password. And Fabricam implemented this in its password reset policy to make sure that when someone's registering, they're actually at their computer and they just haven't left it unattended. So she puts in her password, and then she's prompted for the information that'll be needed to verify Anna's identity in order to let her reset her password. So her favorite teacher was Ms. Greengrove, best childhood friend was Sonia, and the number on her access badge is 1492. Now, those of you who are familiar with FIM password reset, that was a very familiar experience. This next stuff isn't. Here is the interactive registration experience for the OTP SMS gate, which lets you verify a user with their cell phone. So Fabricam actually already has a mobile phone number and an email address for Anna, so they'll use those as part of the registration process. They've configured it so she could edit them if they're wrong, but they're right, so we'll just proceed. So she puts in her mobile phone number and her email address, and then she's done with the registration process. And in the real world, Anna could have completed that in probably about 60 seconds, and I could have too if I weren't talking. Now, for purposes of the demo scenario, let's fast forward into time and imagine that Anna's working at home and she's reading the New York Times, and she decides that she wants to log into OWA, but oh darn, just got back from vacation, can't remember my password. What she does is she goes to the FIM password reset portal, which will come up in just a moment, and she will put in her username, and then she will be asked to verify her identity using the same information that she provided just a moment ago for the secret questions. So she's Anna A. And from here, she'll put in her answers to the secret questions. Okay, her favorite teacher is Ms. Greengrove. Best childhood friend is Sonia. Number on the employee badge is 1492. And now, QA gate, the knowledge-based authentication was successful, and now a security code has been sent to Anna's cell phone, which is my phone, and hopefully everyone just could hear the bing from my cell phone as that security code was delivered to it. So I'm going to go into my phone, and I'm going to type in the number, 855-594. And that's a security code that was generated by FIM. It was sent to an SMS provider that Fabricam has a relationship with. We'll talk about that more lately. And from there, sent to my cell phone, where I can use it to authenticate. And now, another security code was sent to the email address that was registered with as part of the previous process. And here we're going to go to Hotmail. Now, in most real deployments, it would be the case that you'd only use either the SMS verification or the email verification for a particular user. But I wanted to show you both in the demo. So open the mail, get the password reset security code. There's this. Oop, I've lost my context there, so I go back. I paste the security code in. Boom, easy. Now I'm able to choose a new password for Anna. Cool. Now what I've just shown is password reset over the internet for an end user who's able to register for knowledge-based authentication, OTP over SMS verification, and OTP over email verification. Now, let's take that a step further, and let's assume that Anna periodically goes into the Fabricam office, where she shares a machine, where she shares a Windows client with some other people there. And so she wants to log on there, But oh no, forgot her password again. So here we show the, I'm showing the password reset experience from the Windows native client. So very convenient experience for people who use domain join Windows machines. Puts the password reset experience exactly where they expect it to be. Best friend Sonia, number on the access badge is 1492. I click next, and cool. Now Anna's able to choose her new password and log in. There's a question from the audience whether we provided any additional customization capabilities in the Windows native client for this release. And the answer is that no, we did not. We have moved, what we have done is we've moved the password registration user experience from the native client to the portal so that at registration time you're seeing a customized experience. The reset user experience in the native client is principally the same as it was in FIM 2010. With the exception of that now you can have the additional gates in the rich client. Now those of you who are observing that process may also have noticed that, that's very interesting. When I reset from the internet, I had to go through those OTP gates for email and SMS, but from the Windows native client, I didn't have that. And that's because Fabricam has a security policy that has a higher authentication bar from requests that originate from the extranet. So one of the design goals we had was to enable people to reset from the extranet, apply a higher bar with the same registration that they have to use for intranet-based password reset from a domain join machine, which is in itself a pretty decent credential. There's a question, can you use the additional gates on the desktop client? And the answer is yes, you can. Okay, so the way FIM works for an example scenario like the one we just saw is that you've got a user with a browser sitting on the internet who accesses a FIM password registration and reset portals, which are standard IIS apps in a common configuration to be published by a reverse proxy. Those portals are clients of the FIM service, and they use WCF to communicate with the FIM service. It's the role of the FIM service to authenticate the user for purposes of password reset. And the FIM service provides information to the portals about what information they need to collect from the QA gate, and the FIM service also communicates with the email provider, the SMS provider, to deliver those to the user, to deliver these security codes to the user. Now, having authenticated the user, the FIM service communicates with a FIM sync service, which is capable of setting a user's password in Active Directory. The rich client experience, you've got an end user on a domain join machine. They use a browser for the registration experience. They're, at the login time, client detects whether they need to register. If they are, they're automatically brought to the registration portal. And you saw the password reset extensions, the native client password reset experience, which talks to that same endpoint as the FIM service. Administration for password reset remains the same as it did in FIM 2010, where you've got an admin using IE to access the FIM portal, which is built on top of SharePoint, which talks to the same web service endpoint as the FIM service. And we retain the capability we've had for a long time of syncing passwords from Active Directory to other directories. So the presentation is primarily divided into two parts. We'll begin with a discussion of setup and then a discussion of configuration. The installation experience for the FIM password portals is pretty straightforward. There's a GUI that lets you do this. It's in the same installer as the FIM service and the FIM portal. You select the components that you want to install on a particular host. You specify whether or not that host is accessible to users on the extranet or not. This is what will determine the security policy that's applied to requests that originate through that portal. You specify the service account in AD that is used by the IIS app pool that the sites will be running under. And then once you've installed those two portals, they're visible as standard IIS web apps. Fairly straightforward. Once they're installed, there are some things that you're likely going to want to do. Certainly for anything that you're going to put in production, you'd want to configure SSL. Any time that you've got the portals running off the box of the FIM service, you're going to need to configure Kerberos. For people who don't do that every day, that can be a bit of a chore. We've included some links in the slide deck that you can download, which are things that the team has found helpful as we've done work with this in our lab. Of course, there's also documentation on this on TechNet. And if the portals are going to be internet-facing, once you've tested things in staging and you're ready to publish them, you'll want to publish you configure the proxies to publish the portals. The end user experience for both the portals and the password reset and the rich client is localized to 33 languages. That's all the languages that were supported in Office 2010, with the exception of the right-to-left languages, Hebrew and Arabic. And then the FIM administration portal, which is also used for other self-service tasks in FIM, such as group management. With the R2 release, we've enhanced the localization support for that to go from 9 languages to 19 languages with the R2 release. The language pack installation is also fairly straightforward. There's a GUI installer. You choose the components that you want to install the language packs for. You choose the languages you want, and away you go. Earlier on, I talked about how we wanted to make it easier to get a password reset solution demonstratable in the lab. Make it possible for someone who didn't have a ton of FIM experience beforehand to get the bits and just get up and running and see how things work before they make a major commitment to figuring out all the details of how the sync engine works and configuring that and making it work in a production-like way. And we've taken a huge step forward to enable this with the R2 release. This is something that wasn't in the RC release, so those of you who've been playing along at home in the TAP program or on Connect, you haven't seen this yet. But we've delivered a PowerShell commandlet with the R2 release. And what it does is, once you've installed the various components, it'll create the MAs that you need in order to get running. Those are the ADMA and the FIMMA. It'll create the sync rules that you need in order to get users from AD into the FIM service from one organizational unit that you choose. It will optionally execute the initial sync operation, so you not only have set up the environment, but you've actually moved you've taken the users and you've copied them over into the FIM service so that you can actually execute password reset operations against that FIM service. And it'll enable the MPRs that you need in order to get password reset up and running. It's implemented as a PowerShell commandlet. The commandlet takes the kinds of parameters that you'd expect. I'm not going to get into exhaustive detail on the semantics of the parameters, but basically you tell the commandlet which OU you want, the location and credential, the location of your FIM service database, the creds for your AD management agent and for your FIM management agent, and the Boolean about whether or not you want it to execute the initial sync operations to bring users from AD into FIM. Who in the audience has an existing self-service password reset solution built on FIM 2010? Hands? Okay, a few of you? Okay, cool. The upgrade experience from FIM 2010 to R2, we spent a lot of time thinking about that, and the experience we think is a pretty good one. The general path that you should follow is to first deploy the R2 server components. The existing scenarios will just continue to work. Then deploy the R2 client. That you have to deploy the client after you've deployed the password registration portal, because the R2 client requires the password registration portal in order to register a new user. Then optionally, and in a lot of cases, we think a tremendous amount of value by doing this, to modify the workflow configurations that you're using, to use the new and improved gates to configure the policies around answers, to use the OTP email or OTP SMS gates for portions of your target users, and then to enable extranet password reset, typically by publishing these on a proxy. So in terms of setup for the self-service password reset feature in R2. We've covered installation. It's a pretty straightforward experience in a GUI. After you've installed the components, you'll want to configure SSL and Kerberos. If you've got a new deployment, you're likely going to want to start off by using the quick start, the PowerShell commandlet, to automate some of the key tasks for getting going and getting and seeing things working in your environment. And if you're upgrading, the one thing to remember is to upgrade the server, deploy the registration portal before you deploy the client. Question? Great question. The question is, if you have users who already registered for password reset with FIM 2010, will their existing registrations continue to be good once you move to R2? And the answer is absolutely yes. We did a lot of work to ensure that was true, and so that should be a very seamless experience. We understand that getting users to register for password reset interactively is one of the major barriers, one of the major costs to deploying a successful password reset solution. So that's something we did a lot of work to make sure worked really well. Another question? The question is, do you have a facility to force users to register after a certain point in time? And the answer to that is in two parts. The first one is for internal users. By deploying the FIM password reset extensions to their client, you can configure how frequently they are prompted to register for password reset. You can make it where they're prompted to register every week if they're not registered. If you want, they can be prompted to register every time they log on to Windows. And so there's a pretty good nag factor that you can achieve there if that's what you want to do. One of the things I've talked about with customers is doing that only very selectively for people who haven't registered for a long time. The second part of that is for external users. Now, for external users who don't log on to Windows using a domain-joined machine, there you may not necessarily have a way to prompt to put UI in their face. And there we think the most common case is going to be incentives or policy that gets them to do that. One option is you can use FIM to send emails to them. Hey, you're not registered. We want you to be registered. You could send mail to a manager or a sponsor of things. Hey, this person's not registered and they should be registered, are a couple of the paths that we've talked about with customers. Okay, we'll take one more question and we'll kind of probably hold the rest of the questions toward the end of the conversation. The question is, once you put the users into FIM, do you have to force the users to reset their password? The answer is no. That FIM's understanding of a user is independent of Active Directory's understanding of a user. And so anything about a user needing to reset their password is purely within the bailiwick of AD. Okay. So in terms of configuration, the most important thing to get right for a password reset deployment is to get the password reset policy correct. And the first part of that is to figure out the different categories of users for your password reset policy. Now, if you're lucky, it may be simple. All your users may have the exact same requirements. They may have the exact same ability to use an OTP, a mobile phone or an alternate email address, and they may all speak the same language. But for a lot of people, that's not going to be the case. Actually, just a quick show of hands. How many people, as they consider self-service password reset, would need to consider a multilingual user base where not everyone speaks the same language? Yeah, it looks like about half. So one of the things you'll need to factor into your approach is you'll need a different password reset policy for each of the languages that you're targeting. Then once you've defined the different categories of user, be they based on language, based on employee type, based on location, privilege, then you want to figure out the password reset policy. And that's a fancy way of saying, what do they need to do in order to authenticate? Is a QA gate enough? Do you want to use a QA gate at all? Do you want multiple QA gates? You can do that. Do you want to add an OTP email gate? Do you want to add an OTP SMS gate? That's some work that can be reasonably challenging to work through with your security office to figure out what is appropriate for the different classes of users that you're targeting with your solution. And I showed before, and I'll talk a little bit more, you can also set a higher bar for the extranet versus the intranet. So that once you've defined your classes of users, if you want to implement a policy that says, if my employee is resetting their password from home, I want to have this higher bar, you can do that, and you do that within the scope of a particular policy. In terms of choosing the authentication gates, that's kind of the next level of the important things to figure out. There are pros and cons to each of them. There is no one silver magic bullet that is the right thing for every customer in every circumstance for every class of the user. Far from it. Kind of the most commonly used gate we anticipate based on the feedback we've gotten is the QA gate, where an admin chooses questions and the user registers their answers. It's basically secured by user knowledge. The primary consideration, so it's very broad reach. Anyone who can type can use a QA gate. The primary consideration is figuring out questions that meet your bar both on the security side as well as the usability side. It's easy to choose secure questions. Choose your favorite 12-digit prime number. But unless your user base is a bunch of cryptographers or graduate-level mathematicians, probably they have very few opinions on 12-digit prime numbers. Unlikely to remember of them. That's going to be a perfectly useless question. If you ask someone to pick a number between 1 and 5, not a very large key space for security there. Maybe easy to remember. So figuring out the right questions for your particular class of users in a way that's culturally sensitive to different areas of the world, potentially appropriate for the various things that those people may have, whether it's an access badge or a laptop that you're asking for a number related to that. Those are important things to spend some time thinking about and not assume it's going to be a 30-minute exercise. It's the sort of thing you're going to want to think about, work through with a pilot group of users, make sure that you like what you've got. The OTP SMS gate is really nice because it's secured by access to a mobile phone, and most of us are pretty attached to our mobile phones. We take pretty good care of them. We make sure that other people don't get them. They're often secured by a PIN. Some of the issues there are you may have users who don't have mobile phones or don't have text-enabled mobile phones or who do not want to give you their mobile phone number. It also is a little bit more of an there's also more implementation work because you need to have a relationship with an SMS provider and you need to do a little bit of some integration work that I'll describe later on. And the third is the OTP email gate. Pretty much everyone has email and knows how to use email, so the reach there is really good. The issue there is, you need to use an email address that's not secured by the password that the user has forgotten. And then for certain classes of your user base, if you have an employee, you may not want to be sending a part of a credential equivalent to, say, a Gmail account or some other webmail account. And so that's where you'll need to work with your security office and figure out what is the right policy for the different users that we're targeting. The primary way that most users will register for password reset at most organizations, we think, based on what we've heard so far, is interactively. In the QA gate, this is a very straightforward experience. You saw it before. That an admin can configure the number of questions that the user can choose, they configure the questions, and the minimum number that they have to answer, they configure the questions. The user answers the questions that they choose to answer, and then the FIM service salts and hashes that data so that we store it securely. The OTP gates, there's more flexibility. The data around the OTP gates that are used during authentication time are stored in two new properties on the user object in FIM. Those are OTP mobile phone and OTP email address. And those can be manipulated or set in the same way as other properties on other resources, such as users in the FIM service. The three experiences we think are going to be most likely are, the first one is the simplest, that a user sees a blank text entry box and they enter their phone number and or their email address, depending on which of the gates they're talking about. The admin achieves this in a very simple way, basically by leaving things as they are by default. Now, the experience I showed in my demo is a little bit nicer, where the user sees a mobile phone number and the email address that the organization already has for them, but the user has the opportunity to edit those in line with the experience if perhaps their mobile phone number has changed since then, or their email has changed, and there was no business process to go find out about that change. That is done basically by leaving the gate configuration as is, and then the admin needs to set those attributes, the OTP mobile phone or OTP email address, possibly by using a workflow or a custom client of the FIM service. Now, the third scenario around interactive registration for the OTP email and SMS gates is one where the user sees the number that's the mobile phone number or the email address, but they can't change it. This is an appropriate experience when the organization already has a business process, a mechanism to capture the user's email address or mobile phone number in a reliable way and keep that updated and get it as part of some periodic onboarding process for students, or the cell phone is provided by the business and the cell number is well known and managed by the organization. In those cases, the sync experience can be a really good one to keep that data correct. We also heard that interactive registration isn't going to work for all organizations, or if it's going to work, it's not optimal based on the cost and effort involved. We've heard from a number of customers that they want to enable their users to be able to use password reset based on data that's programmatically entered on behalf of the user, so the user doesn't even need to be bothered with any kind of registration experience. And we've implemented this for the R2 release using PowerShell commandlets, and I'll describe those commandlets in just a moment. Those are deployed with a FIM service. They're part of the existing snap-in for those of you who have used that. The typical use case is not to use the commandlets on a one-by-one basis, but would to be consumed by a script or consumed by code where you've got a target collection of users and you're going to invoke the commandlets repeatedly. There are four commandlets that implement this functionality. The first two are the primary ones that you'd want to think about for a programmatic registration. The first one is the Get Authentication Workflow Registration Template. That nice piece of English right there lets you retrieve the format of data that the FIM service will want in order to register a user for a particular workflow. So if a workflow has a QA gate with a certain number of questions and an OTP SMS gate as part of that workflow, this commandlet will return that information to be used. The second one is the meat and potatoes of the feature is the commandlet that lets you actually register a workflow, taking as a parameter the user that you're looking to register and the authentication workflow name that you want to register them for. The third commandlet lets you unregister a particular user from a particular workflow. We'll talk about a scenario for that in a moment. And the last one lets you confirm whether or not a given user is registered for a given workflow. This lets you tell whether your previous request to register or unregister a user programmatically was in fact successful. So the scenarios we've heard around that, one of them was a really good one. Hey, we've got this existing password reset solution. It took us years to get all of our users registered. It cost us a lot of money, measured actually in the millions of dollars. And the last thing in the world we want to do is go through that process again in order to use your password reset solution. And so that was one of the kind of the key scenarios we had in mind as we designed this. And so the approach that we'd anticipate an organization in that situation would use is they'd read their user password registration data from their existing solution, either get an export or read it from a script. Now, that data would have to be available in clear text. And then use our commandlets to register users for the password reset workflow that applied to them. Typically, they would use a script to iterate through a list of users in order to do this. The second scenario is similar but builds upon the first one, where the organization actually has a process where they always collect the information that they need for user registration. As part of an employee onboarding and provisioning process, student registration process, what have you. So here the approach is that they'd want to first register their existing users, where the model would be a lot like what we just talked about, where they'd get the data from the target system, register their existing users in FIM. And then for new users or users with modified data, they'd have script or code to get that new or updated data and then invoke the registration commandlet for the users who were new or who had updated data. The last scenario around programmatic registration is automated deregistration, where an organization wants to periodically get users to re-register for a password reset. A canonical scenario there is one of my TAP customers, where they have an annual password expiration policy. And what they want to do, and a year is a long time, they think their users may forget some of their answers that they provided 11 months before. And so what they want to do is actually require the user to re-register for password reset shortly before their AD password expires, so that if they mess up their AD password change process, they'll be able to fall back on a new password registration data that they are likely to remember, likely to be current, in order to minimize calls to their help desk. So the way they'd achieve that is they'll implement a process to identify users who are targeted for re-registration. In the example case I described, they can look at the password expiration date on a user, and then write a script to periodically target these users and invoke the deregistration commandlet. In the demo, I talked about and showed that it's possible to configure a higher bar for password reset requests that originate from the extranet. The configuration of this is done by a new property of each authentication gate. You can set this within a particular workflow for each gate. You'd see this control visible, where you can specify whether the gate is to operate for all password reset requests that trigger the workflow, or only those password reset requests that originate from a password reset portal that has been configured as being extranet accessible. A common case that we think many customers will follow the pattern is having a QA gate that applies to all requests, and then for requests for the extranet, they'll apply an OTP gate, or, either the SMS gate or the OTP email gate, to get that second factor of authentication from the internet. The implementation, we wanted to avoid anything complex in terms of IP filtering. We landed on an approach that we think is a lot simpler and more manageable, where when the password reset portal is installed, you remember from the setup experience that the admin specifies whether it's accessible only on the intranet or also to the extranet users. When that portal, when it sends a message to the FIM service, will include an optional some optional information in the SOAP message header to specify whether it's been configured, whether that portal is configured for extranet or non-specified. And then when the authentication workflow is running, each gate will look if this request originated on the extranet as to whether the gate applies to it or not, and it will only execute that gate if both the request came from an extranet configured portal and if the gates actually omit the gate unless both things are true. I'll spend a few minutes walking you through, for those who aren't familiar with it, what the admin user experience looks like to configure the gates of an authentication workflow. The QA gate, the admin can specify a variety of things about the number of questions that the user has that exists in the gate, number that are displayed to a user, the number that the user has to put in answers for during registration, then the some parameters around what qualities are necessary in order for the answer to be allowed. There's a checkbox about whether you want to allow a user to input duplicated answers. We think most people leave the default value of no, don't allow duplicate answers. And a regular expression that allows you to define what answers are acceptable within a particular gate. And this, the default regular expression is a minimum of 4 characters. But you can use this to change the length or to enforce a particular data type or a variety of other things. We also provide ability to configure the text that describe those policies to users so that they don't get, so that you don't just tell them, not allowed, but they need guidance about what is allowed. The one-time password email gate has three primary things that are configurable. The first one is whether during an interactive registration experience, whether the user is allowed to update their email address. The length of the one-time password is configurable between 6 and 12 digits. And the email template that's used to send the one-time password. So you can customize the text, layout, fonts, colors, etc. Anything you can put in an HTML message. The configuration of the OTP SMS gate is very similar to the OTP email gate. The primary difference is that instead of configuring an email template, you're configuring a simpler message that shows the SMS text message that will contain the security code that is sent to the user. I mentioned early on that using the one-time password gate required some integration work. And this is the one place in my demo where you actually do need to write a bit of code. We provide sample code, and I'll tell you how that works in a minute. The way the gate works is the FIM service is hosted on a Windows server, no surprise there, and a request comes in that triggers the OTP SMS gate. The OTP SMS gate passes a message to the SMS provider DLL. I'll show you the API for that in a minute. That's your code, and your code will then send the SMS message off to the SMS provider that your organization has a relationship with. The SMS provider is responsible for putting that message into the GSM stream for delivery to the user's cell phone. So the typical steps in getting this up and running are choosing an SMS provider and getting a contract with them, getting documentation for the API that they expose to send an SMS message, writing an SMS provider to target that API. Again, I'll show you the link for sample code there. Compile your code into a DLL with a well-known file name, and then deploy that into a particular folder on the host of the FIM service machine. The API for sending or for receiving an SMS message from the FIM service is pretty straightforward. They'll basically pass along the mobile number that it needs to be sent to, the text message that contains the security code, and the request ID that originated the need to send the SMS message. The request ID is there in case you need to do logging for billing purposes or error tracking purposes. And we've provided a lab guide with sample code on TechNet, which is a good jump start for getting something up and running with the SMS gate. Question? I'll paraphrase the question. Have we developed any relationships with SMS providers so that they've developed something that you could basically get from them and use out of the box to bootstrap your solution? That's something that we're looking at. It's not something that we've completed at this point. As for purposes of our testing, we've done a little bit of work to integrate with a couple of different SMS providers, but that's not code that we're publishing. One of the key goals that we took for the feature set in this release is to enable you to provide an experience that feels really tailored for your organization, that it looks like something that your IT shop is providing, and it's not some offering from Microsoft that's looking for private data that, hey, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this data going to Microsoft. We took the approach of the basic model is that we've shipped default experiences out of the box with our default text, our default graphics, our default styling. And we allow you to define overrides to any of those things. And we took that approach basically so that you'd have those overrides could be easily collected together in a place where they could survive an update for servicing. One of the key things we wanted to achieve is ensure that when you've customized our portals, that the next time, if you need to deploy a new build of FIM because to get for a bug fix or some new release, You don't want to have some complicated experience to unwind and weave out your own customizations. So we've done work to make that a really simple, straightforward way that your customizations will survive a servicing update or a new build with them. The scope of the customization, we think, is pretty broad in terms of you can change the banner graphics, you can change almost all the elements of UI text, and you can change most of the elements of the theming that are important to the user experience. We drew the line, you can't change the sequence of pages or add intermediate pages and things like that. But within the experience that we provide, you can really do a lot to the look and feel to make it seem like an app that you've developed in-house and it feels like something comfortable for your users. The approach for doing that is to create a customizations folder under directories that exists for the password registration portal and the password reset portal. By default on the C drive, you see the locations there. To create a logo, very straightforward. I did it last night for my demo in a very small number of minutes. Basically, by getting a logo, 450 by 90 pixels, I think was the dimensions. It may be 490 by 50. I'd need to look. You place that logo in the customizations folder, and you create a small CSS file with the CSS element that you see on the screen there. Do an IIS reset. The portals pick it up and display your banner. To change the theming in the portal, the style of buttons, the fonts, the colors of things, of the elements that are shown, the spacing, layout, you create a style.css in the customizations folder. Then the general model is that anything you put in that style sheet will override the default that we have that we shipped with the product. And there's documentation at that URL that describe what is customizable and the principles behind that. Likewise, the strings in the portal are customizable. I think you may have noticed in the demo that the tab in the browser bar said Fabricam password registration, Fabricam password reset. And I achieved that by using this feature to be able to customize the strings in the portals. You do that by creating a skeleton resx file, which has the header information that you see there. And then we've documented, then everything else that's customized is achieved by entering key value pairs in the document. We've documented the keys on TechNet that enumerate all of the different text elements in the portal that can be customized. And then just putting in the data that corresponds to the key for what you want for the particular string to show up in your portal. This is also localizable. You'll end up creating a separate folder with the ID for the locale if you want to have different customizations in different languages. So a recap on configuration of the password reset solutions in R2. The most critical and the first step is figuring out the categories of users that may have different security policies and figuring out what the password reset policy is that you and your security office agree is appropriate for letting a user reset, whether it's from the internet. We also provide what we call object history reports. And here you can see the changes that have occurred on a particular object in the FIM service, whether that's a user, the properties of a group, members, or other filter definitions in a set, the MPRs that govern permissions in the system, or for purposes of password reset, the most important one is requests themselves. And filter them based on, you know, what have these users done, what was the outcome of it, more to the point, what was the policy that governed it that allowed that request to be made, when was it made, things like that. So you can get a pretty good review of the password resets and password registrations that have occurred successfully in your system. We provide extensibility to create custom reports. So if the things that we ship out of the box for the reporting feature don't meet your needs, there's a model by which you can get the reports that you need. And it's and most critically, it's not limited to the requests that are still residing in the FIM service database. This is stuff that we anticipate will be able to scale to years of requests. So reviewing the capabilities of the R2 release for password reset. From an end user perspective, you've got two user interfaces. You've got a password reset experience initiated from the Windows client logon, where if the user gets to the logon screen, they forget their password. They can click reset password and have an inline experience in a very convenient place. Now, governed by the same policy and the same registration, there's also the user can also use web portals, you know, cross-browser portals that support mobile device browsers, where the user can register and reset their password from the internet or the extranet. From an authentication perspective, we've kept the QA gate and enhanced it with the ability to configure what answers users are allowed to provide as part of the registration experience. And we've also added the capability to authenticate users via SMS or via email. We've significantly enhanced the customization capabilities for password reset. We've retained the ability to have different questions for different users. Now we've added the ability to have different gates for different users. We've enabled you to configure a higher bar for requests that originate from the internet. And we have configurable UI for the portals, so you can make it look like an app that is, that's appropriate for your users and your environment. And we've improved our support for auditing for password reset scenarios. We've kept the ability to look at requests in the FIM portal for things that are recent. And we've added the capability of using reporting against the data warehouse or the FIM reporting feature for historical changes over a much longer period of time. So key takeaways about FIM and password reset. FIM password reset intended to help you reduce your help desk costs. Pretty straightforward. If users are helping themselves, they don't need to call help desk. You don't need as many people or as much time from your help desk to support password requests. You get better compliance outcomes. The fact that the password reset process for an employee is in band of an automated system means that the system itself will enforce compliance with the policies that you've defined. And by using the reporting features, it is easier and less expensive to prove compliance because you don't need to have an Excel tracking sheet about what various people at help desk are doing. And the FIM password reset solution will increase user productivity and satisfaction because people can help themselves. They don't need to call help desk. They don't need to wait. They don't need to, you know, have the, you know, the fun questions of, you know, of telling someone what their favorite teacher's name is when they're trying to think it through. So with that, thank you for coming to the session. I appreciate you here on the last afternoon of Tech Ed. And I've got some time left for questions, so I'll open up questions to the floor. Please.
I really like the compliance features.
Yep.
But I know that I'm still going to have some Anas who call the help desk.
Mm-hmm.
How is it possible for us to have a help desk UI that integrates with this so that my compliance reports can have all of the help desk, all of the resets, not just the self-service one?
The question is, how can I have help desk use this in a way that's unified with the way end users do? That's one of the things that we'd love to do. We've heard the request loud and clear when we were figuring out what's in and what's out for the release. on the trade-off of being able to ship on this particular time frame. That was one that we just weren't able to get in. So that's something that's definitely under consideration as we're doing planning for the future.
But is there any API that I can call to write an event into the same data warehouse from my code so that then the reporting comes out unified, even if I write my own password change code?
In terms of getting stuff into the reporting database, that would need to be a more detailed follow-up conversation. Question there?
Yeah, regarding the Windows integrated password reset for the Windows login,
yes.
I'm assuming that you had said that you have to have good connectivity back to your AD domain to be able to handle that. Does that also allow, or is that allowed via direct access for a remote user?
The question is, does the Windows client logon experience work over direct access? I'd say, it can work over direct access. We have not exhaustively evaluated under what are the configurations required to make that work.
But okay.
We've tested it. We've seen it work.
Very good. Thank you.
So you've added OTP SMS gates, and you've added OTP email gates for the password reset scenario. Will those gates work for step-up authentication for requests that are not password reset related?
The question, the FIM 2010 portal supports step-up authentication for requests in the portal. The question is, will those gates work for step-up auth in the FIM portal? It's not a supported scenario today. Feedback taken from this and previous conversation about the desire for that.
Thank you.
Does the SMS DLL have to be digitally signed to function?
The question is, does the SMS DLL have to be digitally signed? Honestly, I would need to refer to our deployment documents to answer that with certainty.
I have a question.
Question?
Are there plans to make a SSPR client for Macs or for what? iOS?
The question, I think I heard it correctly, is there an SSPR native client for a Macintosh or another system such as a Unix or IRIX system? The answer is no, there is not. For those systems, we target the password portals.
One thing I was not clear is, if you are, say, on a non-Windows client, can you just go to the intranet SSPR portal page and do your registration? Or do you have to do it from the native client?
The intranet-based password portal will password portal will require you to be able to authenticate against AD. If your client can authenticate against AD using either Windows auth, which sounds like not the case, or basic auth, then yes, the user could register in the portal. Questions over there?
If you're using the rich client, is there any way for the Q&A gate to prompt for RSA token or anything like that way?
The question is, if you're using the rich client, or I'll broaden it generally, is there any support for using an RSA token or some other authentication factor in what I've shown? The answer is not right now. That was probably the also in the top three things that we really wanted to do is to provide some extensibility for custom authentication gates, and that's something that we just couldn't do in this release on the time frame that we had.
Is there an option to exclude certain group of users like administrators from the ability to request a password reset from the external gateway, but allow while they're on the internal network?
The question is it possible to restrict certain groups of users from resetting from the internet while retaining the ability of those users to reset from the intranet?
Yeah.
That can be achieved by writing an authorization workflow that would evaluate the request. That would require a bit of code. It would not be the most super fantastic user experience, but it is achievable. For those privileged users, the policy could probably tell them, look, don't do this, it's not going to work.
Okay. Maybe one further question is, So when we enable it, is it for all users, or is it, or can we exclude certain group of people from the ability to request, whether internal or external?
The question is, when we enable this, is it for all users or is it configurable? And the answer is, like most things in FIM, it is extremely configurable and flexible to define different collections of users and different policies for those different collections. Whether that collection is one user or some much larger number, you can have as many collections as you know, within reason might choose.
Thank you.
Sure.
What's next, I guess, really in particular for Windows 8 and Office 15 in terms of, there was a long time before Outlook 2010 was actually approved, being with R2. How does that fit in with the time frame with being supported in IE10, Windows 8, and Office 15?
So question about our roadmap for supporting the latest, greatest version of Microsoft platforms that we work with. Windows 8, next version of Office, IE10, certainly very much on our radar. We're in a planning phase right now, and so we haven't announced the specifics of the plans and timeframes. But yes, absolutely, you know, beyond the question of a doubt, the sort of thing that we're going to do.
I have another question. It's not clear to me what you have to put in the DMZ in order to make SSPR work over the extranet.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that?
The question is, what do you need to put in the DMZ in order to make password reset work? The short answer is that we are not prescriptive around that. The requirement is that your user is able to access the portal. And where you choose to put that portal and what you choose to, how you choose to publish that portal or protect that with firewalls is, our product does not impose specific requirements there. That's up to you and your organization. The requirement is that the user must be able to browse to the portal, and the registration portal needs to have be able to get an authenticated AD user.
So would we need an external cert for it?
You'll certainly want to configure SSL for anything that's facing the public internet.
Okay. Any integration with the System Center Service Manager available or planned to be more integrated in terms of the portals?
The question is, are there any plans to announce with respect to integration between the FIM self-service capabilities and certain the self-service capabilities exposed in System Center Service Manager? There are no plans to announce at this time. It's certainly, we talk with that team on a regular basis, so it's certainly one of the things that we'll consider.
If you have multiple branded namespaces with the same language pack, is it possible to be able to push the portal out to those different namespaces?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please?
If you have multiple branded namespaces, so, you know, you have four different companies that mm-hmm. we would support,
yep.
is it possible to push the portal out with the same language pack and have different brandings?
So your question is it possible to have have different instances of the FIM password reset and registration portals running against the same FIM service?
Correct.
That is not something that we've explicitly considered. Off the top of my head, I think it would work.
If
you need a definitive support statement, we need to have a follow-up conversation.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, I don't see any obvious barriers there.
Okay.
One more. Are the ports defined between the portal and Active Directory? In other words, do you have them actually documented, what ports are required to go through the firewalls?
The question is, are the ports documented in terms of what needs to be opened between the FIM service and Sync service and Active Directory?
Yes.
Yes, those will be well documented.
Okay, thank
you. I don't know them off the top of my head.
Okay.
No, maybe the last one.
Yes?
If you have a scenario where you only want to do SMS OTP,
yes?
You have the mobile phone numbers already in your organization.
Yes.
So you fill out the OTP SMS attribute in your FIM service.
Yes.
would that still require me to actually have within that import MPR or sync rule or something like that to run your PowerShell to programmatically register them for the OTP? Or is there any other way to do it when I don't want them to register? I just want them to be able to use their already enabled mobile phones.
So the supported scenario is that if a user is going to register or is going to reset their password, they must be registered for the workflow that enables them to reset their password.
So I would actually require me to have a PowerShell workflow to run your PowerShell to an
right
automatically register them
just
to get the user to mark bits together. Yeah,
there's a property on a user which marks
and I can't set that without using a PowerShell.
It might be possible to set it, but it's not a scenario that we've tested, so I can't call it a supported scenario.
Okay.
If there are no other questions, the request I'd have is it'd be great to get evaluations, your thoughts on how things went, and thank you very much for attending. Much appreciated.